you know, someone was asking me the other day about, you know, what should I be doing more of? And we were just talking about the things that had been working so far. And she's a GP and she's going to come onto the podcast as well. And I was like, just, you know, you don't need money at this point to do a lot more of the things you're doing. You just need to take 2 more hours of your day. I know you might be tired. I know you might have a lot going on, but could you be doing more? Could you be researching online to see who's doing what? Could you be understanding how to read company accounts on a simple YouTube video and then looking into these businesses in more detail? Do you know people you can pick up the phone to, ask questions? The answer is yes to all of those things. Hi everybody, I'm Duncan Krieger. Welcome to DefenderCast. Finally, we get a chance to show you guys something slightly different. We are recording a podcast, both in sound and on video, and I'm incredibly excited to bring the next few guests to you. Please hold on to your seats and enjoy the ride. Just before I go, I don't get a chance to do this very often. Please make sure that you leave a little comment wherever you're watching or listening. Thumbs up would be really nice, and subscribe so that you are kept up to date with what we're up to. There is a mailing list which I will ask you to subscribe to for all tab things, and most importantly, don't forget to give me some feedback because I'd really appreciate it. Welcome to DefenderCast. I'm doing it again. I'm on the road, and this time I've brought DefenderCast to my very close friend Lee's house. We're currently standing in his games room where we recorded the podcast. This podcast was something personally I enjoyed a lot. Lee's an interesting character, but he is a true entrepreneur. He buys and sells and owns several businesses, and I found it extremely interesting, even though I know a lot of these stories, just listening to the fundamentals of the way that Lee looks at a business. During our discussion, we talked about all of the businesses that he's currently invested in, and at some point in the future, I just thought I'd show you his pool while we're here. At some point in the future, we'll start to talk as well about Lee's big success stories, as well as, importantly, some of the things that haven't quite gone according to plan. So you can tune into this podcast and tell me what you think. And if you'd like to hear more from entrepreneurs, I've got a GP coming on next, and she's also trying to start her own business. And I think she would benefit from listening to what we're doing here. So let me know what you think of my interview with Lee. I can promise you Lee will be back. He's got a lot more to talk about, and he specifically had a rant to get off his chest that I didn't give him time to do today. So thank you very much. I really do appreciate your time. Let me know what you think. Hi, Lee.
Hi, Duncan.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, very good. Thank you. Good. Welcome to DefenderCast. This is going to be episode 5, season 2. Really starting to come together now, and I am enjoying myself. We are sitting here in Lee Bushell's games room, which doesn't sound as strange to me as it probably does to everybody else. But I've spent a lot of time here, a lot of time at Lee's house, and Lee and I have regular catch-ups. We are extremely close friends, and Lee is somebody that I rely on quite heavily for some personal stuff. We'll leave that to the side for now, and everything business related. So welcome, Lee Bushell.
Thank you very much, DK.
We are going to start today, I think, with a plotted history of kind of who Lee is and how you ended up with this extravagant home that I love spending time in. And one of my kids is here today, and it's the summer holidays. So can we take a little wander back in time? You did actually study, didn't you, and got yourself a degree.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit.
I went to school here in Birmingham, and I set up my first business when I was 15, selling fake Ralph Lauren apparel out of the boot of a sixth former's car. And then I went on to start promoting parties at school, whereby I'd take my posh school uniform off and put my jeans on and a shirt, and I'd pretend I was 18 and started doing underage parties.
Yeah.
And that sort of moved on from there into promotions. And during this time, I went to university, set up a promotion company, providing staff. done various things over the years. One of the things I did back then was I imported 28,000 pairs of Pepsi slippers from the Middle East to the UK.
Go on, tell us a little bit about, I mean, is that just something that you were out looking for, or did you stumble across it?
Well, I tried to find Coke slippers. No, just, you know, I think even now I follow the rules that I sort of did then, but I wouldn't say they were set in stone, those rules. That I think a lot of them came naturally, which were, if there's an opportunity, go and grab it, seize the opportunity.
So you've obviously honed those skills, and we'll talk about that more over time, but you think that was a kind of innate kind of...
I think it was subconscious, yeah. So, you know, when everybody was going to these parties, I was the one organising them, I was the one making the money on them, or trying to, and I was the one that was there working, looking around, making sure everybody was having a good time, rather than having a good time myself. So,
and did you see that as a business at the time? Did you see, like, I'm starting a business, or were you just like, I don't want to be on the mug, I don't want to be the mug on this side of the bar, I'd rather be the mug on that side of the bar?
Well, yeah, I'd go with the latter. So it wasn't, I always knew I wanted to be in business, but it wasn't per se, this is going to be the business I'm going to be in, and I'm going to professionalise this business and set it up and so on and so forth.
So tell us about the slippers. Just give me like a snapshot of what, like a couple of phone calls. Well, what was it like in that time?
She was no, a lad from Manchester was working for me on the promotions. This is when I'd gone to university at Leeds to study law, and I was doing nightclub evenings in Leeds and in Birmingham. And a lad that was flyering for me mentioned... No, sorry, I got that wrong. Somebody I knew in Israel said he was having a meeting. I think it was my best mate's cousin, having a meeting, and the guy asked him if he could sell 27,000 pairs of Pepsi slippers to the UK. Then the guy that was then flyering for me from Manchester mentioned that his uncle, some big importer.
Oh, we know that.
Abramson's.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just put the two together, and I remember calling Mr. Abramson. I can't remember his name. Was it Trevor Abramson or something like that?
Come back.
We're allowed to mention names.
Yeah,
yeah.
Say what you want.
And I remember speaking to him and saying, you know, I've got a lot of slippers here I'd like to sell.
Do you remember all the numbers? Roughly.
Guess 60p a slipper. I can't remember. It wasn't a lot. And he basically said to me on the phone, you haven't got a clue what you're talking about whatsoever. Give me the guy in Israel's number and I'll buy them direct off him and I'll give you a drink off it. I was like, well, I wanted to do the deal really. And he was like, just pass over the number. So I trusted him. I did that and he paid me my commission. So that's how it happened.
And that, I guess, was the start of you, like, realising that you know, could seize an opportunity and make some money out of it.
Yeah, that was one of the first few times that I did something out of the comfort zone. A couple of years earlier, I'd launched there was a British perfume brand called Penny Black that actually Vinnie Jones was the face of.
Okay.
And the company was in Birmingham. They got introduced through friends of my parents, and they were his accountants, and he needed a load of promotional staff. So I had an interview with him, and then he said to me, can I provide him with promotional staff all over the country? So we did that. We'd go into stores, you know, spray the perfume and so on and so forth, and people loved it. And then we got asked to open the clothes show, and Vinnie Jones was there.
Yeah.
And so I got to work with him. I was 17 years of age. I had 40 staff working there, and no word of a lie, a quarter of the school year was out of school that day. And I got pulled in after that, and the teachers were like, Bush, all this must have been something to do with you.
Well, how did you get on at school? What was school? Did you enjoy school? Did you get, because a lot, like, I've had these sorts of discussions, and I guess I'm gravitating towards more entrepreneurial type people. There seems to be like two really different schools of thought, if you pardon the pun. How did you get on at school?
Well, the school I went to, King Edward's Birmingham, it was at the time...
You rave about it.
Yeah, it was one of the top independent schools in the country. It was academically brilliant. When I joined in 93, it was actually the top school in the country, ahead of St Paul's and Westminster. I was rock bottom throughout my time there, no doubt about it. 126 kids in our year. My GCSEs, I came 122nd out of 126. Three of the kids below me got kicked out of the school, so there's only one dumber kid than me left in at A level. So academically, I was always fighting to stay up with everybody. But one of the things the school did do was, because I suppose I was the most entrepreneurial in my year, they allowed me to do things and make my class and my year were a captive audience for me. So they were the ones coming to the parties, they were selling the tickets for me, they were buying the clothes. they were doing the promotions at the
time. I mean, it's like
I loved every minute of school, I have to say.
Yeah. I guess they allowed you to, although you weren't academically, you've obviously got the kind of schmoozy aspect of, you know, how to play all the angles. So, yeah, fine. I didn't get the highest test results, but I'm sort of carrying myself in a different area, like you said.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is kind of what I would say who you are now. You don't play by the rules, but, you know, everyone still enjoys interacting with you. And
Sometimes they do.
Yeah. I think they do. And this to me is just like a different forum for exactly what you're describing there. Like, none of this existed back then. I mean, the mics did, because we heard that Michael Jackson recorded Thriller on these mics. But this sort of platform to get your voice heard and build a following, which is to me what you were just describing you were doing then, has changed. And I think I'm pretty sure you're going to enjoy it all. So already it just feels like serial entrepreneur talk is where we're going, with like first business at 15, and before that you're already doing some other things. And one thing I'm keen to capture is the scale of the different businesses that you are involved in right now. Yep. And maybe in some more detail the difference between which ones you've started from scratch and which ones you've bought and sold or bought, because obviously you don't start as an entrepreneur by buying businesses. You sort of elevate to that point once you've got some in the bag. So tell us, like, businesses that you're currently working on now. I know you'll forget some, because that's just the nature of, you know, obviously, Lee and I have this discussion a lot, and we sit down and we talk about all of our different businesses in a very relaxed environment. So we know a lot about each other. But I think if you could give people a kind of idea of the scope of different businesses you've got on the go at the moment.
Okay, so currently I have a bridging loan business that you kindly helped me start. For those that don't know the story, I was one of your early investors. I don't know how early, but...
Yeah, quite early in West One, yeah.
Yeah, so I was one of your early investors, and then I came to you guys, didn't know you at the time.
No.
We claim we met years early on the rally, but I don't recall it. And you helped us set up... Initially, it was going to be a home for our money, and then it sort of progressed into a small to medium-sized bridging loan company.
So let me just give the background on that. I mean, the way that my bridging loan business works now and the way that my previous lending business worked, we sort of created this peer-to-peer lending model, which basically meant that investors could invest their own money directly into loans, and they would receive a set return for the money that was invested in those loans. And typically we had, I mean, you know, when you came on board, we probably had 50 investors. When I left the business, I think we had 250 investors. And now they've got something like 600 investors. But you were typical of a kind of entrepreneurial investor, which is you wanted to get a return on your money, but then you were also interested in, hang on a minute, there's a business here. I'm not, as an investor, I just get a return on my money while it's out in a loan, but for the business, you're earning arrangement fees and you're doing all these different things. And my thing's always been, you know, not to keep it all to our chest. So you talked about, you know, I might do this on my own. And then I think you were going to say I was sort of happy to help, which I...
Yeah, so well, initially we discussed doing West One in the Midlands.
Yeah, we did actually, yeah.
And then once we launched, we realised that we weren't getting the what we'd call the vanilla loans that you guys were, because we were new to the marketplace and a lot of the brokers didn't want to deal with us. So we had to do slightly quirkier deals. And really for a number... It's 7 years old now, I'm going to say.
Is it? Fucking hell.
Yeah, it must be close to that. And I'm going to say for a lot of that time, it's always been playing it very safe with that business. This wasn't really one of the real entrepreneurial businesses that I was planning on ever growing. It was more, let's play this safe. This is another way of investing in property.
Yeah, protecting your own money first.
Yeah, it was all our own money. Until about 2 years ago when we started doing this bond.
Yeah, I mean, from the outside, what I would say, looking in at that business, and obviously I've looked in quite closely, but you've had a network, because of the people that are involved in that business, a lot of the people that you've employed in that business are people that have worked for you or currently still do work for you in other businesses in your portfolio. So you don't... You know, one of the questions I wrote down, which I don't normally prepare this much, but I wrote down, what is your day job? And I think we'll come back to that later, because you don't specifically sit in any one of these businesses on a kind of full-time basis.
No.
So let's just go through it. So you've got a lending business, and what's that called?
BIG Property Finance.
BIG Property Finance. We'll plop it up on the screen somewhere. Okay. Plop or pop, I don't know.
Whatever. Then we've got an employment law and health and safety business called Guardian Support.
So you bought that business or started that business?
Started that business 8-9 years ago with a guy I met at law school.
Okay.
Because I qualified as a lawyer in the intervening years.
You're still a lawyer, aren't you?
Well, I have, yes.
Yes.
I'm not practicing at the moment. I'd have to get my my points.
But you're a qualified lawyer.
Yeah, but don't ever come to me for legal advice.
No, and that just while we're on the subject, that didn't feel like a career path for you.
I mean, that was, can I swear?
You can swear as much as that.
That was the old man. I've paid a fucking fortune for your education. You're going to fucking go to university.
Yeah.
And then, well, actually, I went back to law when my nightclub burnt down, but that's a whole different, that's a whole other story.
One we can capture at a different time, I think, because I want to try and get through your, I want people to get a real feel for the amount of stuff you've got going on, the balls up in the air, because, you know, this is just a very tiny part of who you are. Obviously, it's your home and it's what you've kind of got to show for all the hard work.
Yeah.
And it will be interesting to go into the businesses in more detail. And then obviously the story I've heard before is what eventually sort of distracted you from law is that you found a business that was going fucking well and that there was no way you were going to consider staying.
Yeah, so, exactly. So I left the law after university. I got the degree and then I was still in business at the time. And then I just dropped it. I just went into business the next day. And then bought a nightclub when I was 22 with the money I'd saved from making money on promotions. That's the natural progression, having a club after being a promoter. And then that burnt down when I was 26. We had to pay a barrister £6,000 just to tell us that our insurance were going to repudiate and we couldn't sue them because of the smallest minutiae.
Yeah.
Even though it was proved that the glass washer had a faulty switch or whatever and just set alight.
And you weren't, so the insurance didn't cover
you. So the insurance didn't have to pay.
Yeah, and I guess
I had to pay a barrister, £6,000. And that was the point at which I realised, I thought, I'm going into the law because I want to be the guy charging £6,000 just to tell somebody they ain't going to win.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that sounds like a very small amount of money in this day and age to get a barrister's opinion on anything.
But
it was a lot of money at the time, I guess. Especially when he was telling you, you're fucked.
Exactly. Yeah.
So we're going to come back to the old businesses that you've not got anymore. I mean, I'm interested in sort of honing in on the different businesses you currently got.
So we've got the employment law and health and safety company, and then we've bought three companies to tie onto that company.
Okay.
One's called safetyservicesdirect.co.uk, I believe, which is a website we bought about 4 years ago. Three and a half years ago, and as we've discussed before, this Christmas I would have had all my capital back, which is great news.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to talk more specifically about why investing in, why buying businesses can be a good idea if you get it right, and also if you get it wrong, because I'm sure there are some, there's loads of things going on. So Bridging started on your own. The Guardian Law started on your own, but subsequently...
Guardian Support, but subsequently
added on, bought other businesses...
To expand that business
and leverage on the good work that you've done so far.
Exactly. You can only grow a business so much organically before you've got to add on bolt-ons.
Yeah, okay. And then what else have you got going on at the moment?
Then there are two investments in recruitment companies. One I did own 50% of. That I'm just about to go out of. You know Tom, my business partner.
Yeah, I mean, Tom's been very briefly on some video stuff before because we went to his office. But that's a business that you bought a stake. Was he a startup or was it an existing business?
So he'd come to me years. I knew him from the club days. He was a Birmingham University student.
So there's a theme here that you collect people and eventually they...
Yeah, I mean, if we go back originally to my gold business,
yeah.
The first 50 staff we had were Facebook friends.
Yeah, yeah.
Or just friends of mine.
Yeah.
I've always employed friends. I've always worked with friends.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people don't subscribe to that theory.
Yeah.
And I don't believe mine is right and theirs is wrong.
But it's right for you.
It's right for me.
Yeah. I mean, I've always faced this as well because I worked with my dad for a long time. I worked with my best friend, Stephen, for a very long time. I've had friends and family. Kelly, my sister, works for Tab now. And like, I've never seen it as an issue. I always think if you're going to fall out with them, you'd probably fall out with them anyway. But also there is a line between like here we're at work and also you and I are not different people in the office to how we are at home.
I think that's a massively important point. Yeah. You know, a lot of people can literally put their suit on and change into a different person.
Yeah.
I'm very much the same person. I will effing blind at home. I will effing blind in a meeting.
Yeah.
My moods don't change as a result. I'm exactly the same person. Yeah. But I can see why a lot of people are different people.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
it's what works for
exactly. It's like you said, what works for you. So, Guardian added on some more businesses. Then the recruitment businesses, two completely separate recruitment businesses, right?
Yeah.
One was Tom's business was a startup.
Startup, and I backed him.
So you backed him to.
I told him years earlier I'd back him on anything he ever did.
Yeah,
I thought he was a good guy. I believe in investing in people, not in ideas.
Yeah.
And I said to him, 100%.
Whenever you're ready.
Whenever you're ready.
And one day he came and knocked on the door. And what? And the deal that you did with him, was that a deal that you... Was it specific to... What I'm trying to say is that a deal that you would offer to anyone that you liked in the recruiting business? Or is every deal different in the...
No, I think it's a fair deal. I think we've discussed this numerous times. The reason why I'm not ever going to be a billionaire is because I believe I'm trying to be as ethical as possible and as fair as possible. I believe that everybody should have as good a deal as me, and I think everything should be, not 50-50 necessarily, but everything should be morally bang on.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of people out there, hugely successful people, not all of them, I'm not knocking any of them, that, you know, kudos to them.
Yeah.
But I believe that they get their ethics and morals slightly twisted and believe that business is business, and if you can get whatever you can out of somebody, that's just business. I don't subscribe.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's two things I would say to that. One is that I certainly subscribe to treating other people the way that you want to be treated. You're not always going to be on the same seat at the same table. Sometimes, you know, certainly with me and you, sometimes I've borrowed money from you. Sometimes you've borrowed, or our businesses have borrowed money from your businesses and vice versa. So, and then also, you know, there's something about a deal that was said to me when I was selling West One the first time round, and someone said to me, both parties need to be equally unhappy. And you know, I at the time I was like, because I was fucking pissed off at like certain elements of it, and I was like, yeah, okay, I guess that does make sense to me. So Tom's business, you backed him, and
fair deal, I do exactly the same.
At the time, was it your plan? Because I'm sort of honing in on this more, having bought a business myself and thinking about it more. Is it about how quickly can I get my capital back, or is it about how good is this business? Is there a plan to run it and grow it forever, or do you want to get it? Like, how do you look?
So I think there's two ways of looking at it, and one is how quickly can I get my capital back, but then the other one is, okay, I'm not bothered about my capital. I want the income from it.
Yeah.
So I think when you get to different stages of the business cycle and different stages of your life with wealth and so on and so forth, you can then pick and choose that, right?
Interesting though, one of those options isn't sell it for as much as possible.
Well, okay, so if you take my personal circumstance, I don't need that big capital payday now. Okay. I had that, fortunately, when I sold my main business.
Yeah.
So I don't need that or want that. I just want recurring income now for the rest of my life.
Yeah, and we've talked about this a lot, and it's something that I am sure we will talk about more and more. But I do accept what you're saying, but my thing is a business that's got long-term recurring income is valuable.
Agreed.
But what you're saying is, I mean, there's obviously a time at which, you know, if someone offers you more money than X amount of years income, you take it, but you're not seeing selling businesses as your way out. You're seeing building up income. Basically, that's the plan.
That's the bottom line. Yeah, of course. So that, it comes with the right offer. Everything is for sale.
Yeah, fine. Fair enough. And
I'd never be arrogant enough to say it isn't for sale or that I want to create 100 million great brands. It's just not going to happen. It's not going to happen. But what I don't want is everybody wants certain things in life. And I'm very fortunate I've achieved what I want. Like, I don't want to live in a bigger house. I don't want to drive a faster car.
Yeah.
It would be nice if we could have yachts and jets. Yeah. And I can't afford a yacht and a jet.
Yeah.
But...
So your focus is now about keeping what you've got at all costs, or?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's parked. I would never risk that.
Yeah.
Although I suppose if you might say bridging loans might risk that, I suppose, if somebody else was.
Well, certainly in the wrong structure it could do, yeah.
Yeah. But
do you want a boat and a jet?
No.
Okay.
It'd be nice to be able to have one if you wanted one.
Yeah. I mean, you do want a boat because I've walked around ports with you all over the world. And I would say on probably 30 occasions we've sat in the boat shops and talked about...
Oh, all right, I want a fucking boat and I want a jet.
It's just about...
I don't want a jet, I'm scared of flying.
Yeah, you definitely
don't. Yeah, okay. Yeah, a boat. Yeah. I mean, obviously, there's different boats, of course. There's no point talking about different sizes of boats.
I get it.
You can go from 100 grand
to... Yeah, you could
million.
Buy a boat. I get it.
Yeah, yeah.
You could put it on your swimming pool. Okay, so Tom's business, what's that called? Wilkinson Partners. So that's a business that you invest in the beginning. Just give us a snapshot of where you're at with that. Do you you own less than you owned at the time?
No, I basically don't own any of it now. I've sold my shares to him. I still have a debenture over the business. He can pay me everything out. He's about to pay me everything out in September. Then, great. He's had a cracking deal.
And in an ideal world, fine. That's the way you feel. You wouldn't like to still be in it. You just feel the time was right.
No, I would still like to be in it. I would have happily not sold the shares. He wanted to be the master of his own destiny.
And was that an agreement you had at the outset, or it's just...
No, yeah. But yeah. That's the way he was going. You know, we'd fallen out a couple of years ago about something so pathetic, it's untrue.
Yeah.
We're friendly again now, and it's great, but he's quite entrepreneurial, and even though he calls me for a lot of things and advice, sometimes he doesn't like the advice. Yeah. He doesn't want to take it. And as 50-50 partners, he's running the business, his gig.
I'm
playing my dad, how my dad plays to me on certain things. I'm playing that to him because he hasn't got that figure. I'm that figure for him.
Yeah.
So,
like you said, at the right price, you're giving up, like taking back some of your time and letting him grow into where he wanted to be in the first.
Yeah, he wants to be the master of his own destiny.
Both equally unhappy.
No, I think we're both happy. You know, at the end of the day, I've got a great return on my money. I've made 3 times my money in 6 years.
Okay.
So yeah. I'll take that any day of the week.
Fine.
I've had a lot worse investments than that.
I'm sure
you
have. So go on. So that's Tom's business.
That's Tom. There's
another recruitment business
called Broster Buchanan. I was a 25% shareholder. Exactly the same thing with them. They want to incentivize more people, so they've taken me down to 5%, and I've quadrupled my money in 3 years. Not a lot of money, but I'm thrilled with that. They very much as well don't like hearing what I have to say a lot of the time. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. Recruitment consultants are their own animals, very much so, and they like to be masters of their own destiny. And
it's very sales focused, isn't it?
Exactly.
Like they live. There's no recurring income. I mean, there is recruitment businesses with recurring income, but as far as you're kind of on your journey at the moment, focus on businesses that produce recurring income. That's something where, from my outside perspective, I mean, if Tom, for whatever reason, you know, as good as the investment is and looks now, if for any reason Tom had not stopped coming to work for a period of time, then that's
what we discussed. If Tom gets hit by a bus, I mean, it will damage the bus. but then the business, even though there's 25 staff, he's the heartbeat of that business.
Yeah.
So if you look at that risk reward scenario, take your money and run. You know, Tom.
Yeah,
Tom's fine, and he's going to do very, very well.
So, out of those first four businesses we've discussed, which you started from, you started two, and you bought two.
There's five now.
Okay.
Because of safety services.
Yeah, fun.
And then we have
scaffolding
business. I started 2 years ago, totally random, left of centre field. I told the team to. At the time, we were looking at buying businesses, and a lot of businesses that were coming up for sale were scaffolding businesses, and they wanted huge multiples. And so we started looking into that. We were going to invest in one, buy one, and then we worked out that actually...
You could spend the same amount of money. You
could spend the same amount of money, professionalise it, get a good brand going, because it's one of those industries that sort of hasn't evolved.
Yeah.
And now we've got a company. Yeah, there was a lot of mistakes at the start. We employed a lot of specialists, and I don't mean that in the positive way.
Yeah.
And they've gone by the wayside. So we lost a lot of money on wages. Scaffolders earn a lot of money. Most of them are on 50 grand a year.
Yeah.
It's just one of those well-paid industries, but it's not a professional industry. You know, if you look, there's probably 5 or 6 big boys in the UK, and then everybody else is a mar and par operation.
Yeah.
So we were just like, okay, let's get a good brand going. Then we started this Gorilla Scaffolding brand. everybody in Birmingham and the Messman sees that brand. We get so much business just from Yell and Google, just because people go on it, and rather than MHP scaffolding in Acox Green or whatever, they see Gorilla scaffolding, and we look like a huge outfit. Yes, we're not, and we are small, and we are growing. But
yeah, I mean,
it's been great, and I've employed one of my closest pals on it, who knew nothing about scaffolding, and ironically, he's done better than the scaffolders that, that we employed at the start.
Yeah, because you need the guys on site being able to put the scaffolding up and down, but there's a hell of a lot more, like there is in any business, that needs to be done in order for the business to find new business, close new business, you know, branding, marketing, social media, which maybe...
Once again, health and safety, again, is a big thing, and that's where a lot of the businesses we try and buy now or start now can be intertwined with others and can get economies of scale.
Yeah, so I was actually going to ask that, because there's a wide scale of stuff obviously going on, but in some way these businesses are connected, you know. There's things that you can use, certainly with people like Rob, I know, pop up and, you know, one day I'll be sitting in this business, next day I'll be on a plane with you to Ireland and you'll be buying another business on a handshake. So scaffolding.
And then...
just quickly, what's the plan, the scaffolding plan? Is it run a long-term income? Are you seeing that as a business that could...
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
It's just turned profitable 4 months ago.
Yeah.
It's going to start paying the money back. Psychologically, on that one, I want to get my money back just because of my relationship with my partner, who, very, very close friend of mine, he's become very close friend.
Yeah.
He's learning in business. You know, he's green to it all. And he's got big shares in the company now because we want to incentivize him. But I very much feel like for us to be proper partners rather than him being very much a junior partner or working for me like he has done, I feel it's important that I get my money back so that he's not constantly getting his dividends and I'm thinking, well, I still haven't had my money
back. Yeah, in this respect, I'm hearing you looking at this business exactly the same, whether you bought it and put X amount of cash in or whether you started it and put X amount of cash in. At some point, it's got to pay your capital back and then it's got to start producing income.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that paying the capital back is psychological.
Yeah, definitely.
Because let's say you invest, because I still do investments of 100,000, 150,000, 200,000 pounds. And even though I'd rather that money was working for me and making money, I think psychologically you want that money back. So in your head, you've got a clean slate. Like everything now is a bonus.
Yeah, there's either... I mean, at a certain point, it's a return on your investment. Until you get your investment back, it's just a return. It's just a yield or an income.
And that leads us into the next... That leads into another thing that we'll discuss later on, which is, you know, when you're property focused and property centric, you're always thinking about yields, return on investment.
Yeah.
When you invest in a company, you either buy, I'm talking about a proper trading company, a company you buy or a company you start, the return on investment just goes out the window. It goes to thousands and thousands and millions of percents. It just becomes an irrelevant figure.
Yeah.
So when I'm looking at businesses, I'm not looking at return on capital. I'm not looking at that at all. That goes out the window for me. That's let's make a fucking fortune.
Yeah, but you, but I mean,
but when I'm investing in property, then it's all about 8%.
I mean, 5%, look, 10%. The big difference is risk. In my opinion, and I don't agree. Like you said to me that I made 300%, three times my money on the one business in 4 years, and I made four times my money on the other business in 3 years. Great. So once your money's back, it is like, surely you've then got to say, for the additional time and risk that it took me to invest in this startup, get my money back, and then calculate how much I made, it is a risk. It is a risk reward thing. And in you know, properties, it is different. And we'll talk about property when we go to part two of this.
I mean, everything's risk reward.
Yeah.
And I've slightly contradicted myself because I've said, well, with the businesses, I don't really care.
Yeah.
And then I've mentioned I got three or four times the money. That's because they wanted me out the businesses.
Okay.
And so at the end of the day, if I was a real hard-nosed businessman, they're cracking businesses.
Yeah.
They've, both those recruitment businesses have been through the hard times.
Yeah, yeah.
They've learned, and they've come through, and now they're making decent dough.
Yeah.
And at this point, they want me out. Yeah. So somebody outside looking in would say, "You're making a big mistake here, leaving."
Yeah.
But actually, I want to be friendly with all those people.
Yeah.
When I look at it, those recruitment companies should be selling for 5 or 10 million pounds in 5 or 10 years.
Yeah.
And then I would have got very well paid.
Yeah.
But they don't want me there. I don't want to be anywhere that somebody doesn't want me.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it's good to have these conversations. It focuses your mind a little bit. And what I'm thinking on the kind of... when we have our discussions and I stick my nose in, what I'm thinking is there's probably a good medium between the two, which is I never go below 10%. So I want all my money back as quick as possible. I want you to be empowered to run your own business. But if I started or invest in this business, I'm never going to go down below 10%. Because like you said, Tom's business might be worth 25 million quid. It might be a long time or it might never happen.
Ironically, that's my first ever business partner who I sold the Ralph Lauren shit with.
Really?
I can't put him on.
No.
People are turning off. The bullshit level.
Are there other businesses for us to cover that you're in the throes of
yeah,
now?
Yeah, I mean... what else do I have?
There's something...
There's a restaurant now, but...
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this is like it is a pizza restaurant. Go on, tell us a little bit.
So, very briefly, another guy worked for me for years. He actually was a rival promoter when we were like 18, 19 in town. Then he came and worked for me on the gold business. And then once again, and then he became a chef. He's a fantastic chef. And I said to him, you know, I'll back you whenever you want backing. He then started a street food business and he won the European Street Food Awards. He was on GMTV, had loads of coverage.
We should go there for lunch, actually.
I think it's closed today.
Is it?
Yeah. We should have gone.
Another day.
Another day.
I thought you said it was closed on Mondays.
It is. It's open Tuesday nights.
Okay, cool.
And anyway, I said to him, I'll back him. He then had a lot of coverage, a lot of people saying, I'm going to back you. And fair play, really nice of him. He calls me up. I hadn't spoken to him for 6 months. He said, you were the first person that ever said you'd back me, so I'm going to go with you. You know, like this is the greatest opportunity ever type thing. And we did it. And it was an itch I wanted to scratch. But it was SEIS money. I wouldn't have invested under anything else.
Yeah.
It's a very comfortable amount of money. And the moment I wrote that check, I knew I was scratching the itch of owning a restaurant.
You actually described everybody it to
wants,
me at the
time. Everybody wants to own a restaurant. Right? Yeah. Somewhere nice to hang out. It's actually great for the kids. And hopefully, I mean, it's breaking even at the moment. It's been open a year. Hopefully it will go on. It's a fucking hard sector at the moment.
But this is not a business that you have any real drive to manage or to
No, this progress. Is very much hands-off investment.
Hands-off.
Most of my investments...
Is there an argument to say, if you didn't have anything else going on, could you... Maybe it's the wrong example, or maybe it isn't the wrong
I
example.
Could do it,
but we're going to open five over the next 3 years.
Yeah, so that's the plan anyway, but obviously I'm not going to put the money in unless it's making money at that
fair enough.
Place. A lot of investments that I've made where I'm hands-off or I'm a minor shareholder, so you're investing and you're getting 2, 3%. I've got to take this one. Robert.
This is what having meetings with Lee is usually like, everybody. Right. We were talking about the pizza restaurant. No, we weren't. Yeah, we were.
Yeah, we're talking about the pizza restaurant. Anyway,
so you were saying a lot of these businesses where you've got a small share...
And I've lost money on, so I could go through. I mean, and that's one of the things I'd like to talk about, whether it's now or later on, is I've told you my mantra in business, and that
Tell
is
us again,
small, lose small and often, win seldom and big. That has always been my mantra. And that is, you know, we're talking about the businesses here that have made money.
Yeah,
I've had 30 that have lost money or broken even, or I've started and have gone nowhere.
So what's the theme? You've already said to me, go on, the key is...
Right, it's like when you're going to a club as a kid, right? If you're not a 10 out of 10, which neither I or you are, you need to try and go and pull 100 women for 5 to kiss you,
okay.
For 7 to kiss you. It's a numbers game. And it's exactly like that in business.
Yeah, got to kiss a lot of frogs.
You've got to kiss loads of frogs. But you're not going to get it right every time.
Is that why you walk around and you have done for the last 15 years saying, I'll back you, I'll back you, I'll back you? Because at the end of the day...
Yeah, but you get better at it, right?
Yeah.
You get better at assessing whether people are full of shit or not. And that's another thing we could talk about for an hour, is the amount of bullshit in business.
Told I call you it
Bullamasey.
Yeah.
That's why I've set up a company called Bullamasey XL that has bought another business and that now has £9 million in assets. And most of that is all bullshit.
Yeah.
Which goes on to another. We could talk about accounts and how accounts can be made to look good and they're not. And the business is inherently shit, but the asset base looks good.
All right. So those two topics for next time are Bullamasey. And you said we were going to talk about... I'll come back to it in a minute.
Ethics in business, people bullshitting.
Yeah.
You know, most people are full of shit.
Look, from my point of view, I genuinely feel this stuff is interesting. Like for me specifically, and I get to spend a lot of time with you, I find it interesting and it sort of gets the juices flowing, for want of a better word.
Yep.
But I'm sure there are lots of people out there like writing notes. I know you always say all 50 of them might be, but at some point I think there is, you've done some teaching as well and you went back to school, and we'll cover that one day another time. Let's just stay on the businesses for a minute. And like, yeah, the other thing was
bed business, right? Because that's a funny story.
Lose small and often. Lose win big.
Seldom.
Win seldom and big.
So exactly, you know, you put, you know, even if there's people out there without serious capital, they can... Do you know what I want to talk about later? I'm going to have a rant.
Okay.
And that's totally in the face of what you're doing at the moment, and that's raising money, and I don't know whether you're going to want to talk about
as
that
as much later. As you want. And, as full, like, transparent
rant,
as possible.
I'll rant about that later on.
Yeah.
But, you know, one of the things that people can do is that invest small amounts. You know, you can invest a grand here, 2 grand there, or whatever. Or invest some of your time. When I say invest and lose often and small, when I say lose small, invest your time in it.
Yeah.
If it's not going to work out, fuck off and do something else.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't stick with that same thing that's not working. Yeah. Definition of madness, right? Yeah. Trying the same thing over and over again and not working. Move on to something else.
So what do you think about...
When you find that big thing, go for it full start. And do you know what the biggest thing is? Do you know what the biggest thing I always say is? And I was living by this quote anyway, and then I read it in Disneyland. Walt Disney said it. It was one of my idols, Walt Disney. And he's like, stop dreaming and start doing. You know, there's so many years, you sit there and you think, I'm just going to try and think of an idea that nobody's thought of. You know, we're not James Dyson. He's a brilliant man. Those people don't exist.
Yeah.
Well, they do, sorry, but they're few and far between. Yeah,
he's an inventor. But you're inventing things out of opportunity.
Well correct. So you go out to the nightclub and you try and start kissing.
Yeah.
And then when eventually you do kiss, you then work out a new way, and then you move on to anal and so on and so forth. You go way further, don't you? But it's how that progresses.
Yeah.
But if you're not in there in the mix, you don't see these ideas.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. But I think
no one's sitting in your fucking living room thinking of shit. It's never going to happen.
I mean, investing like the way that you do with little bit of capital, you've earned the right to do that and to kind of spread yourself across with having the right people around you. It takes time, but the answer is your first deal, going back to the beginning, was an opportune moment where somebody mentioned to you, because you were the type of guy who was prepared to invest your time and make some phone calls and call Mr. Abramson, who you'd never known before, but you knew he might be the right person through someone else that had come to the club. And that is, I completely agree. You've got to kind of give yourself the opportunity to win, the way I look at it. And sitting in your room having a good idea. Everybody I know has had a good idea.
Yeah.
Everyone's had a good idea. Some people have had the same idea that's gone on to become an unbelievable business. And those people might have not had any money, but had the ability to take that idea to the next level. And I, you know, someone was asking me the other day about, you know, what should I be doing more of? And we were just talking about the things that had been working so far. And she's a GP and she's going to come onto the podcast as well. And I was like, just, you know, you don't need money at this point to do a lot more of the things you're doing. You just need to take 2 more hours of your day. I know you might be tired. I mean, you might have a lot going on, but could you be doing more? Could you be researching online to see who's doing what? Could you be understanding how to read company accounts on a simple YouTube video and then looking into these businesses in more detail? Do you know people you can pick up the phone to, ask questions? The answer is yes to all of those things. And to me, it's just actually some people enjoy more like talking about the negatives and why they can't do it. Whereas, you know, people like you and I, we're like, well, we're just going to do it.
I totally agree. In the 80s, when our parents were in business, you know, a lot of our parents were in business.
Okay? Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them did very well. The economy was very good when Thatcher was in and so on and so forth. That's a whole separate conversation again. A lot of people did very well. And the old school way of business was you went and worked in a job. You did well at that job. And then you just went out and did that on your own.
Yeah.
And nowadays, I feel that things have moved so far that there's a whole market out there of entrepreneurs. And they call themselves entrepreneurs, but they're not fucking entrepreneurs. All they do is raise money. Mm. They don't actually know what they're raising money for.
Yeah.
They're just like, oh, we're raising it. We're on a raise. We're on a raise. And then they fail because they're trying to be the next Facebook. And I've invested in quite a few of these people.
Yeah.
And I've lost money with every single one of these people. And well, I've tracked all the businesses that have come to me for investment for the past 6 or 7 years, and one has made a fortune that I missed out on, and I shouldn't have missed out on him, of course. One has made a fortune. Every other business, and I'm talking hundreds, have fallen by the wayside. So I'd like to see people going out there, doing something, whatever it is, like the GP, go and be that GP.
Yeah.
And then, do you know what? Go and borrow the money, save enough money, don't spend it down the pub.
Yeah.
Go and save enough money to buy your first GP practice.
Yeah.
So you buy that GP practice you're in, or go and buy another one.
Yeah.
And then when you've done that, go and employ some more GPs that work under you, and go and buy another
one. Yeah, and you have to obviously obtain other skills, but my thing is, there are other GPs doing that. So there's nothing to, it's not like,
it's not rocket science,
like dentist practice. I mean, your brother's a dentist. There are some dentists who will go to work every day and they will, you know, moan about their back pain and, you know, they'll do their job 9 to 5. And there are others who will do it differently. And the guy who, you know, saying it's all right for him because he's got 5 dentist practices, you know, those are the people that could do it themselves if they wanted to. If they really, really wanted to, they could do it themselves.
Exactly.
Any other businesses we haven't covered?
Well, the bed one's a funny
story.
Tell us
the bed story. You like the bed story. I love the bed story.
So,
speaking to the mic. So, move your chair forward. Oh, yeah. You're right.
About 14 weeks ago, my daughter said she wanted a princess bed. So, I looked online. I found a company straight away, and it was a lot of money. So, I called my old man and said, why don't you buy your granddaughter a bed? Of course, he went for it straight away. Anyway, I was waiting on the bed. I emailed them, said... They said it'll be here next week. Emailed them again, it'll be here next week. After about 16 weeks, something wasn't right. So I emailed them again and said, listen, I'm going to cancel my bed. I want my money back. I wasn't going to. I was just trying to force them to drop off the bed. They then said, oh, we will. You're due in next week. Didn't turn up the next week. I then get an email from the company one Monday afternoon saying, we've gone out of business. You've lost your money.
Can see your face at that point.
At that point, I exploded, and I totally exploded. Wrote to him and just said, "You're a fucking fraudster. When you set up next week, because you're going to do a Phoenix. When you set up next week, I'm going to chase you down, and I'm going to come after you, and I'm going to sue you." I then get an email straight back saying, "I'm not a fraudster. This has happened. I didn't know what I was doing. I was running this business." And then I email straight back, how can you have gone out of business? You get the money up front for these beds. They're made of MDF. You're charging me $3,000 for a bed. Yeah. I don't know what your material costs are. I'm guessing 200, 300 quid. I'm guessing your margin's 50%.
So you had this conversation with him?
Over email.
Yeah, yeah.
I then said to him straight away, call me immediately. Fair play to the guy. He called me immediately. And I then realised within 3 minutes that the guy didn't have a clue about business. And then I said, yeah, but you know, how many beds do you sell? Because I was thinking, And he turned around and he went, we turn over 1.6 million and we sell 50 beds a week. At which point I turned around to him and said, I'll be in Belfast tomorrow. I'm coming to buy your company and save your ass. And I flew to Belfast with Rob the next day. And we realised this guy was in major trouble. He'd put up PGs and so on and so forth. Him and his wife were going to go bankrupt. And we bought the rights to the company, the designs, the Facebook following, which got 620,000 followers, which is what you subscribe to. And that was it. We bought the company in a day. The legals were sent. They didn't even have a lawyer. So once again, I was trying to do a fair deal. I don't want to go into the exact details of the deal because it's still a bit raw for certain customers.
Apart from the fact that you know, Brooke wanted her bed and you wanted to make sure that was going to happen, there was obviously some, you know, you started connecting the dots and then you were like, there's a business here. And what is it about, like, the next level of you not wanting to leave without, you know, doing a deal and making that a business rather than just saying, you know what, I've got 7 other, 8 other, 9 other businesses on the go. We don't know anything about making beds. But you were looking at the cost to make them versus the cost of selling them and thinking there's a business here.
Yeah. So I'm just going to backtrack slightly.
Yeah.
I always say this to you. Conscious competence, unconscious competence, unconscious incompetence, and so on and so forth. I know what I'm really bad at. I'm not going to go and start buying beds. I'm bad at most things. I just stick to what I'm good at. I don't run any of my companies. I let people that can run companies run the companies. As soon as we went to that business over in Belfast, well, actually it was 2 hours west of Belfast, it was very obvious that there were some serious synergies, economies of scale that we could do. We have a humongous factory, which is another business we'll talk about later today. We have 220,000 square feet of factory, 50,000 of which is sitting there doing nothing. I could move that business into 5,000 out of 50,000. So I'm getting rid of the rent, number one.
Yeah.
Number two, most of their sales were in mainland England, most around where you boys live. Yeah. Sorry. That's where people can afford those beds.
£3,000 beds.
Exactly. Right. Or they started £1,000, but yeah. Their delivery costs were absolutely hammering their margin. That's basic.
Yeah.
Your customers are all in England. You need to be in England.
Yeah, those are. Yeah, I mean, he's also built like his mini version of Disneyland in a field 2 hours east of Belfast.
He spent £200,000 of people's money on building. Yeah, on building a showroom in a town. So with you bought 2,000 people.
So
in
you
it.
Bought the business.
I didn't buy the. I bought the rights to the business. So you didn't want to. Still 400 customers.
Yeah.
Like myself, that. Have paid for a bed and haven't got it.
Yeah.
Now 90% of those people will get their money back because they're paid by credit card or PayPal. 10% won't. Now we are going to make their beds for free, but we don't want to announce that yet because otherwise the other 400 won't bother getting their money back from PayPal.
Fair enough.
So we're trying to do the right thing, ethically the right thing, rather than telling everybody to fuck off.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we don't want to throw ourselves under the bus and have to make 400 beds.
So when was this?
5 weeks ago.
And what's happened in the 5 weeks between then and now?
Within 10 days, we were up manufacturing. We'd taken the team from Ireland, we fly them over every week at the moment. We've started recruiting in the UK to replace them because obviously long term, that's not...
Viable.
That's not viable. And then eventually they'll transition over in the next few months. And then we'll really ramp up the marketing again.
What's the bit that excites you about, like, because... it's obviously a lot to do from that minute where you shake hands and say, right, we got a deal. Then are you like,
I've got a great team around me. So I'll
is that the high point of doing the deal? Like, yeah, cause I called you for a catch up and you were like, I've got to tell you about my day. I've just landed back in Brum.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay. So we talked the whole way home. You were like on fire. Like, you've got to hear this story. It's the best thing that's ever happened. We've done the deal, closed it in a day and I'm on my way home. I bought a bed company and we're about to start, setting it up. What's the bit that you love about it? Like,
I mean,
it's a small deal.
I knew it'd be hilarious to talk about it later, right? You were giggling, you were giggling, and I knew later on people would be like, "Oh, what a fucking joker!"
Yeah,
but
you're not doing it for the story. You're doing it for, do you just get bored and think,
"There is a great business there. Yeah, you know, there are so many fundamentals. This guy's, his designs are incredible.
Yeah,
he started it. He started it in his shed." It grew too big too quickly. He didn't know what he was doing at all. He's now personally got some of the stuff he signed up to was just absurd. Mm. Allied Irish Bank, that's another conversation bank, but we won't go there now. Lent him the money. Somebody came up with an idea. I know. I'll lend you £100,000 to start building Disneyland in the middle of fucking nowhere, and you can personally guarantee it, even though you don't own a house, you don't own anything else. Between the banker and him, just some astonishingly bad decisions.
Yeah.
And for us, it's a great business. Like, nobody owes us any money.
I'm really interested in, like, the skills that are transferable across any business. Like, you can go into business that somebody's run for 15 years and you can say within an hour, this is fucking stupid, this is fucking stupid, this is fucking stupid, fix a few things, and all of a sudden, you know, especially when there's 50 orders a week.
Yes,
well, and the £1.6 million coming in, a lot of what you've got to do is just stop make the hole in the bucket at the bottom as small
as possible. Hardest part of any business, sales.
Yeah.
If a business hasn't got sales, it's fucking hard.
Yeah.
And you know, it's not like we can go into a business and just click our fingers and get sales. That's the hardest part. When a business already has those sales, especially something online like that, the easy part is cutting out the shit, cutting out the costs, so it becomes profitable.
Well, I think would be a good, like, regular segment for us is, like, pitch us. Because you still obviously like investing in new business, investing in businesses, whether they're new startups, probably less so for you
less
now.
Less so startups, you like, you know.
But also existing businesses. You've also got more of a thing now for businesses that are, you can be bought cheaper because they're not doing very well.
So that's another thing to, yeah.
But, you know, certainly I think it'd be interesting for us to have like, you know, once a month we get two or three people to come and pitch us, and then we'll, you know, look at the business from all different angles and try and chop it up and see what we can do. Any other businesses at the moment? I think we've covered a lot.
I mean, there's a big business
you bought not very long ago, which is, you know, going through like a major reform, and timing's just not ideal to discuss it today or to release it today. But in the next couple of weeks, it definitely will be.
Yeah.
It's also extremely interesting. It's quite different from what you've done before on many, many levels.
Yeah.
And I think we will, you know, we'll cover that separately. We were going to keep it to two parts. This part, I think, is interesting enough as a... Yeah, how long have we been going? So we've been going an hour. And we haven't even started really getting to know... there's a list of things we want to discuss, but I think this was all about, for me, setting the scene, introducing Lee to the podcast, both introducing Lee to the audience, or the growing audience, hopefully, but also... introducing the audience.
Fucking grow now, DK.
You're probably right. Look, at the end of the day, it's extremely interesting. People don't... I'm fortunate that I get a chance to, you know, offload all my shit on you and also and listen to all this stuff regularly. But a lot of people that you're talking about, they're sitting in their room and they've got this idea, they don't have the same network. For whatever reason, until now, they don't have the network. And when we were young, we didn't have YouTube to watch for these sort of things. And, you know, what part of my bugbear about this is, you now do have access to people that are taking time out of our day. This isn't earning us a penny. In fact, it's costing me money to do this. And I'm doing it because I feel that there's an opportunity to share this with everybody. And like, I really appreciate you having us at your home. And I think it's interesting.
Can I just go back to one point? You know, you said you can go into businesses and see problems, and they've been doing it for 15 years. Sometimes you can't see the wood through the trees, and I am just as bad as everybody else. People could come into any one of my businesses and see major, major foibles in that business and major issues that I can't see, even though I think I'm quite good with business. Case in example, you have come into our bridging loan company and absolutely destroyed everything we did on that one day.
Mm.
And we're sitting there like a bunch of school kids without a clue. And all of a sudden we realise we don't know that much.
Yeah.
And you never stop learning.
Yeah.
You never know everything. And I think it's, whilst I'm not a big, huge fan of consultants per se, I think if you've got friends around you, especially like we do, we bounce off each other. It's so good to have people that are just there challenging you.
Definitely.
And just showing you stuff that's so obvious. Sometimes the most obvious stuff's right in front of you and you don't see it.
Yeah. Interesting. Thank you very much for your time. We're going to do another. While we're up in Birmingham, we're going to reshuffle and do something else, and maybe hone in on something specific like property, because that's good for me and my channel. I'd like you to grill me on the app as well, like just tear it to pieces, right. Like all the goods and all the bads. And then we will think about when we're going to pencil you in, and you'll have your chance to rant as well before the end of the day.
Thanks, mate.
Goodbye.